Good afternoon. My name is Arye Kantor, and I'm here to present on green spaces and the role in urban sustainability. Leeson, Monica, Sophie, and Marley are also in the group. So a quick outline what we're going to talk about. We're going to show our sustainability map. Then we'll talk about some of the themes that we're able to pull from our map that motivated our projects, and then we'll each present on our project. So what were the themes? What was our intention with making the maps? Green space is a very large term, a lot of things. Urban landscaping, urban planning can define green spaces differently. We decided to define it as areas that people go to experience green. And we decided to have different levels on the level of engagement that people experience with the green space. So sort of the first green space that has almost the least or no level of engagement with the space in a meaningful way is golf courses. Generally reserved for people in the upper economic classes, golf courses are wide open, mowed grass, maybe some trees. People generally aren't going there for the sake of the trees, but rather for the sport they play. Obviously on the map, you can see that the golf courses are at the edge of the city because you need a lot of space, and that's where it's cheapest. The next level is green roofs. These are sort of an alternative view of green. Generally, we think of green as the earth. We think of green as the places that surround us. But we felt that green roofs were also important because it was a way to access the natural world within the urban setting. Green roofs help a lot with urban heat island effect, and we felt that it was good to showcase it. We can see that these aren't all the green roofs, but a few of the main green roofs are in the center of the city, which really helps for people who might not have access to large parks that are generally in the periphery. The next level is parks, obviously. This is sort of a deeper engagement. Generally, people do go to parks just to hang out and play with friends, but people also might go to experience nature, hang out with the squirrels or the beavers. And again, while these aren't all the parks in the city, we felt that these were some of the biggest parks, both in spatial amount and number of people. So yeah, this is the parks there. Gardens is even a deeper engagement with the nature. Instead of just experiencing green spaces, gardens, you're able to literally put your hands in the earth, get dirt under your fingernails, and engage as well. You're able to start to get back from the green spaces on a physical level. With gardens, you're able to sustain yourself through eating and through food. Again, these aren't all the gardens in the city, but some of the larger gardens that we felt were important for people to know about. And the final is greenways. These are sort of the grab bag miscellaneous green spaces exploding with joy. We felt that these are all sort of different projects. One's a back alley garden. One is sort of a unadulterated green space. A few of these are urban forests. And we felt these were all sort of the mix and match that were sort of important to show, but didn't really fit into any single category. So we put it in greenways. So what did we learn? We felt that green spaces were great for people to be able to engage with the world around them. People went to these spaces to grow, both with themselves, with their friends, to volunteer, to have a good time. As well, green spaces were a place to learn. There are lots of programming that's going on in green spaces, as well as community activities where people can gather in sort of a third place, if people are familiar with that term. So now we'll go on to the projects.
Okay, so here we go. My project is a user-based litter cleanup initiative, so blending both waste management and green spaces. Litter is a problem for cities, and Montreal is no exception. Our green spaces are hubs of activity. We often have art festivals, music festivals, and weekend get-togethers. My research has uncovered two main approaches that Montreal has taken to solving their litter problem: fines and relying on volunteer organization groups. Fines. So on the municipal level, Montreal has implemented fines of up to $1,000 for catching someone littering. In 2007, they implemented a new regulation that held building owners responsible for the litter that was around their doorways. This was received with, this was a very contentious bylaw because it doesn't actually target the litterers and makes other people responsible for the litterers, which wasn't a very popular idea. The other thing that we have in Montreal is we rely on volunteer groups whose sole purpose is to come in and take the litter away on designated days, but they don't, again, they do not target the litter themselves or hold the litter responsible for their actions. So what these two approaches help to do is solve the litter problem that's already there once littered, but it doesn't solve the source. It doesn't attack the source, stop the littering from happening in the first place. The approach I wish to pursue instead is to target the users of green spaces in Montreal and stop them from littering in the first place. So my research, My research question is long-winded. Are user-based, self-driven, and self-sustaining litter pickup initiatives more effective at reducing the act of littering, really going to the source and stopping littering from happening in the first place? And my research has shown me that education is the answer. I got this from a really great group called the Deadheads that are fans of the Grateful Dead. They formed a council called the Minglewood Town Council. This band had a huge following that had incredible environmental impact. People stayed in green spaces. But the Minglewood Council was in charge of educating people to take responsibility for their actions before, during, and after the shows. And they showed great results and empowered people to take responsibility. I want to start this for the Tam Tams in Montreal. We have a Sunday group that goes to Mount Royal at the monument here, and it's just a way to experience Mount Royal. There are tons of fun activities. It's a great initiative. However, the impact is also great. You can see the littering sometimes for days after this event. I want to design a small volunteer group who would go, and their primary goal would be to educate people during the Tam Tams, and to leading by example in order to empower people to take responsibility for their impact, and primarily do this via education. Unlike Les Amis de la Montagne and other little litter group initiatives, this group's goal would be to cease existing. I hope to encourage people and empower them to take littering upon themselves and to really witness the impacts of their action by witnessing littering reducing themselves.
So some scholars have proposed the idea that play is an evolutionary instinct. When children play, they engage with the world around them and gain knowledge and understanding about how their environment works. In essence, children play as a way to fit into their environments and to develop a sense of self within their environment. Studies have highlighted the importance of school playgrounds as efficient spaces in which children are engaged in activities that encourage the development of cognitive, physical, and social skills. These studies highlight the importance of complex environment that offer many opportunities for different kinds of play. Children may become bored or dissociated with playgrounds that do not offer something new every day, thereby bypassing important developmental stages in a child's life. It has been suggested that natural environments provide more challenging and stimulating activities for children. Case studies have shown that physical activity in natural environments improves motor skills much more than in artificial environments. These case studies have also shown that natural environments can contribute to the development of emotion mediation and control, which are obviously very important social and behavioral skills. Furthermore, these studies have shown that interactions with nature can restore attentional functioning, which is also important in academic contexts. So how can we reconcile the benefits of nature and playground space? Natural playground is one that uses natural materials and features as well as indigenous vegetation to create complex and interactive structures for children to play with, all the while challenging and stimulating them and providing learning opportunities about the natural world. Which brings me to my research question. Do children benefit more from being exposed to natural playgrounds or playscapes compared to traditional concrete or grass schoolyard playgrounds? So just a quick point of context for the city of Montreal. Natural playgrounds have been officially created in schoolyards in BC and Toronto, yet brief research has shown that similar initiatives have not been widely introduced in Montreal. Except for there is one school in Outremont that has implemented a natural playground. It took 5 years to implement and cost around $300,000. So the point of my project would be to try to make this kind of natural playground initiative more available to the children of the city. So my project would involve the creation of a natural playground at a public elementary school in Montreal. The objectives would include using questionnaires and interviews, keeping in mind that there are ethical protocols to follow when gathering information from children, in order to make a comparison between a group of children regularly exposed to a natural playground compared to a group of children that is not. So in doing so, we can evaluate differences in academic and performance as well as social activity and skills. Given previous research about the benefits of being exposed to nature, one can infer that natural playgrounds, which provide the benefits of both traditional playgrounds as well as the added natural component, will yield greater academic and social benefits for children who play in them frequently compared to those who do not. If my project is successful and manages to highlight the benefits of natural playgrounds versus traditional ones, I hope that this project may pave the way for future projects involving the construction of natural playgrounds around the city, making natural playgrounds a priority for schools and for the children of Montreal. Thank you.
Hello. So the context of my project is sort of the Western capitalist system. I find that through the creation of the way we live and the way we consume, humans have been removed from our actions. Whether it's simply being able to go to the supermarket and buy our food, or the way we treat the natural environment, it seems to me that humans think we're on top of nature, that we have somehow been able to control our surrounding world. Along with this, many of the environmental movements and environmental programming that has been taken up has sort of lost the forest for the trees. While having programs with specific objectives are important, if we lose the greater scheme of things and the understanding, then we're really just running in circles. I found with my experience as the Environment Commissioner at SMU, the Student Society at McGill University, that many programs had altruistic objectives, such as the Plate Club, who rents out plates to give to students. However, while certain individuals who maybe already had bought into the system used their plates, a majority of people didn't access this service. The goal of my program is to switch from an ego understanding of the world to an eco understanding. So what's my research question? What effect will monthly holistic experiences in green spaces have on participants' daily environmental activities? Essentially, I'm asking if people can see themselves within an ecosystem, within the full system boundaries, will they maybe change their daily activities? Right now, we simply sort of say, this is the problem, this is how to fix it. But we aren't encouraging people to think about why there's a problem or how there's a problem. Reverend Neil Whitehouse of the Chaplaincy Service mentioned to me in a conversation that when people are given this guilt about the problem, they freeze, they have unable to action. So what's my program? Steps on the Mountain. Essentially, I hope to utilize one of the most beautiful green spaces in Montreal, Parc Mount Royal. By taking small groups of people on monthly trips on the mountain, I hope to engage them with their natural surroundings to dissolve the boundaries that our society has created. Whether it's through mindful walking, pay attention to certain senses such as sight and sound, small group discussions, or creating art with the natural environment, I hope to start to show that we are part of the world and not on top of the world. At the end of every event, I plan to give takeaway points to consider how our consumption affects the world. Where is this food coming from? What happens to this piece of trash when I put it in my trash can? At the very end, I hope to give surveys to see how people's daily activities have changed, to see if creating holistic experiences and then empowering with action is more effective than simply just giving people the problem and then giving people the action. Thank you.
So I'll be talking about gardening as a means of stress management, linking the social and environmental components of sustainability. At McGill, stress is a growing issue, and it's especially precarious during exam period. In 2012, there was an increase in drop-ins to the mental health services from 25 drop-ins per day to 102 drop-ins. McGill students have a number of options available with them to manage their stress, such as the therapeutic pause program, which comes in with dogs to the library. Biologist E.O. Wilson hypothesizes that biophilia, the love of all that is alive, is something that is innately part of humans through evolution. The human tendency to focus on and affiliate with nature has from there become a means of healing our community. After World After World War I, horticultural therapy was used as a way to help rehabilitate the veterans who were wounded from war. Furthermore, therapeutic gardens are commonly used to deal with the mental and medical issues associated with aging. Furthermore, the act of gardening itself has been shown to lower cortisol levels, which is a stress hormone, and thereby having a stress-reducing effect for humans. My proposed initiative is to allow students to garden during the exam period on campus. This will be done through collaboration and consultation with the McGill Ground Services to allow students to take care of some of the planters on campus for the specified period of exams. Particularly, I was interested in the McTavish Street because through the Greening McTavish Initiative, it has become almost a symbol of sustainability, and it also provides a very convenient location for students for during their study breaks. Through implementation of this initiative, I would hope to be able to answer the question of whether gardening has quantitative and qualitative stress-reducing effects for specifically university-age students. The qualitative effects would be assessed via journals kept by the participating students, and then quantitatively by taking salivary cortisol tests before to provide a baseline, and then right before gardening to determine their high stress levels, and then after gardening to determine their low stress, to determine the reduction in stress levels, you would be able to determine what the qualitative, quantitative actual effects were. Ultimately, during exams, students are in a very stale environment, and by allowing students to get their hands dirty, this provides a number of benefits, such as garnering a relationship with nature, a sense of ownership for their campus, as well as a restorative activity, potentially improving memory and attention. And hopefully, through this project, we can show that there are actual benefits in terms of reducing stress. So by letting students grow plants, we can grow better students.
So my particular subtopic within the Green Spaces Sustainability Map was having a look at the green roofs in Montreal. And this led me to consider the green roof that's on our very own campus, the McGill Life Sciences Complex. And the Life Sciences Complex is actually an interesting case study in its own right because it's been held up as a sustainable design precedent for future buildings and as a triumph of engineering and architecture here on our very own campus. It was awarded LEED Gold certification in January of last year. So it has some particularly salient design features. Among these, energy conservation initiatives, a really state-of-the-art rainwater cistern that cuts potable water consumption by half. And one feature that I found particularly striking was the approach of Diamond Schmidt Architects to create a socially sustainable space in the new design. There are actually physical links between all four buildings of the complex, the Stewart Biology Building, McIntyre Medical Building, and then the new Bellini and Cancer Research Buildings. Now, can the same be said of the green roof on the Cancer Research Building? Is it setting a sustainable design precedent for our vision of green space on campus? It's been touted as reducing energy consumption, mitigating the urban heat island effect, but one thing that struck me, is this really a socially sustainable green space? I don't think it's a stretch to say that this isn't really an accessible space for most of the McGill community. So this is the green roof here in the background. It's on the Cancer Research Building. So this got me thinking, what is our vision for green space, and how does it fit into this umbrella of Vision 2020? So kind of asking the questions, where are we now, where are we headed, and where do we want to be in the future? So this discussion really brought me to my research question, building on the momentum of Vision 2020, could the Three Bears Park Reclamation set this kind of precedent for sustainable green spaces on campus? For those of you unfamiliar with the site, this is Three Bears Park. And I think my fellow peers probably know this as the site of Open Air Pub, really popular in the beginning of the fall semester and at the end of the winter semester. Unfortunately, any time other than OAP, it really is a barren landscape and a vacant space. So can we do something about this? What I propose is to reclaim the park. And I really wanted to look at this through the three pillars approach. creating a space that's economically, socially, environmentally viable. And so a central feature of the new design is a collective gardens initiative. So here's the kind of central dell leading up to the Three Bears Fountain. This is where I propose we have the collective gardens. And I'll show you guys this. Kind of, this is what I'm thinking. These raised bed structures, like right, I'll show you again, in that central dell there. So trying to reinstate here a sense of place, and like from that stems a sense of community and of belonging, what Aryeh was talking about in the introduction of reconnecting people with the natural landscape, and from that reconnecting people to each other. And to end off here, a nod to OAP. We know that OAP is here to stay, of course. So we want to accommodate the same volume of people, obviously, maybe even more people, right, and for other events. So what I propose to deal with this kind of design challenge of the really steep vertical slopes on the periphery of the space is to incorporate terrace seating. This is the Le Bon Centre in London. And you can see that there's actually like an undulating topography that already exists, which would be conducive to this type of landscaping. So thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, guys. So we'll go to question period.
My question is for Marley. Again, like, great idea, and I would love to garden during exam period. That would be awesome. However, I'm just wondering, the exam periods are not in growing season. They're in December and in April, most of the time, except for people like us who take summer school. How do you envision this?
Okay, so first and foremost, that was actually an issue I really considered. So initially, I had considered an indoor garden. But then with my actual idea when it came out, there's a couple possibilities that I thought of. Number one, there are certain plants that are okay to plant during this time of year. I did a little bit of brief research. I'm not a plant specialist, so therefore I needed to still look into it a bit more. But also there's gardening that isn't necessarily planting, but I guess more tending to the soil and like preparing it to preparing it for the actual growing season.
This is for Aryeh. I really liked your project. So we talked a lot in class about the role of green space with health. And I sort of, when I was thinking about like the idea of bringing people up to the mountain and connecting to the green space, I sort of was wondering like how convinced are you by that argument? When you showed us the eco and the ego, I thought it was really, do you think that health has something like an impact between that? And it's hard to phrase it, but do you think, like, say, like, because it's unnatural, that sort of ego pyramid that you were showing us, do you think that it could be an explanation for why there's been studies that show that green space is really good for health?
I definitely think so. I think with the ego frame of mind, we lose touch with who we are. And I think that while health wasn't one of the main intentions of my program, I think that the health benefits of being around nature, of walking through the mountain, the stress reduction would be extraordinarily beneficial. So I agree.
Other questions?
Oh. I really like the proposal, but I would urge you to expand the range of engagements as a team you showed with different kinds of open spaces. Is the kind of new city making that we will be engaged in the coming years. So mountain certainly is the most valuable asset, public asset that we have. And we, but it's an island measuring 500 square kilometers. We got 10% of land set aside with a lot of parks, a lot of other, and the engaged kind of open spaces such as community gardens and so on are in great demand, and there are waiting lists for that. So perhaps if you were to just look at your proposal, not only back to the nature and eco in that classical model, but new kinds of engagements that all of you have shown, it would make a very different kind of a city. So I would say it's a great vision that all of you have, and I compliment you all.
Thank you very much for that comment. I wonder, other questions from the floor? Oh, here we are.
I bet a lot of you are going to kind of feel the need to answer with both, but I was going to ask, there's kind of seems to be a focus between, or kind of a divide between promoting the creation of new green spaces and then bringing people to existing green spaces and kind of creating that sense of ownership. I was wondering if we could just kind of get the opinions of people on which of those do you think is more important?
Not to undermine anybody else. I think that Montreal is really exceptional in its green spaces, and we saw a lot of them. There are problems with it, and each of us kind of identified one. One of the problems is that people don't necessarily take responsibility for their green spaces and their impact on their green spaces, which is something that my project hoped to solve, is to increase people's responsibility for their impact. So that would be an initiative focused on current green spaces. Expanding is obviously a hard thing to do, but what we've found in our research is there are so many new like frontiers for expanding green spaces, like green roofs and reclaiming old parks that are barren and things like that. So there are, it's not just about expanding or building a new park, it's about reclaiming and rebuilding and then also looking for new frontiers and new areas to make green.
Yeah, it might be interesting to maybe explore in a separate research proposal maybe kind of the interaction between creation of green spaces and maybe the motivation to protect them. So, for example, if we see that more green spaces are being created, will we see more people taking care of them, or maybe the inverse? So it might be interesting to explore the interaction between those two themes. I think that another thing that we also touched on in our class in particular is just aesthetics in general are really important for the protection of green spaces. So maybe that's something to take into account with everyone's project proposals regarding green spaces, the fact that when people think something is beautiful, they tend to want to protect it. So that's something else that adds on to your question.
We have time for one last question. Maud?
Oh. Great.
We can take two if there's one last after.
Lisa and I remember we discussed this this problematic with TamTams before, and one thing that I thought about after our discussion is that the garbage bins are always full very, very fast, and I'm just kind of pointing that out and asking if you're accounting for that in your project, kind of, because even if people become responsible and they kind of want to, dispose of their litter properly, do you think the city should play also in, you know, like, really increasing the amount of places to put these garbages in these areas?
I think that's definitely another facet to be considered with in terms of litter and litter pickup. What I really wanted to focus on, and it's not an invalid research proposal, I just think it's a different one. What I really wanted to focus on was people taking responsibility themselves. We have like mechanisms in place right now to pick up litter. There could be another mechanism to make more garbage bins available. But the fact is that people have to be motivated themselves to take responsibility for green spaces and for their actions. And that's really what I wanted to address in my research proposal, was to like make that connection. So I think it's another research proposal, and it's probably intimately linked, but I was more focused on the mentality change aspect of it and taking responsibility.
Okay, last question.
Okay, this question is for Arye. Your idea is very interesting, and I want to know if you are considering the different biomes around Montreal. Like, for instance, there's a lot of group of bird watchers in the along Saint-Laurent. So maybe you could target these areas as one of your site to demonstrate the importance of Montreal for bird migration, for instance, and also other parts of Montreal. So do you think this would be significant to that project?
It's very interesting. It's a good point, and I think there is a lot in the island of Montreal to offer, but McGill students are extraordinarily busy. So I wanted just to start with the mountain because it is literally two blocks away from campus. And it's a shame that most students probably don't access it as much. So I think maybe, yeah, for a stage two and we had a more committed student body or we built the network to non-students, that accessing those other spaces could definitely be a possibility. But to start, just the mountain, McGill students keep a bite that we could chew properly.
All right, thank you very much.